This is audiobook of Anthony Borges. ABC of Life. First published 1945. Kindle version November 2014. The current ebook publisher, Jeff Cutler, does not make any claim to copyright in this presentation. Anthony Borges produced at least 6 books which claimed to be the words of Monsignor Robert Hugh Benson. These are ABC of Life -1945, later published as Here and Hereafter. Facts -1946. More Like -1947. Heaven and Earth -1948. Life in the World Unseen -1954. More About Life in the World Unseen -1956. Recorded by Anthony Borges. First short on, about Anthony Borges. Anthony Borges was a fine medium with a strong gift of clairaudience. It was through this particular aspect of his mediumship that he was able to assist Monsignor Robert Hugh Benson in realizing his dearest wish, that of putting into print the knowledge and facts of life after death, and helping to banish the fear of death, which affects so many people. The books for which Anthony acted as Monsignor's amanuensis are rightly regarded as among the classics of spiritualist literature. It was always a source of great happiness to him that he had helped, in this way, to spread the great truths of spiritualist teachings. Anthony passed in 1989 at the age of 93, a man of profound intelligence allied to an inquiring mind, whose interests were many and varied, although those which remained the strongest and lasted all his life were the study of music and of psychic science, in both of which he could be considered something of an expert. A man of great kindness, warmth and generosity, he was a splendid example of true spiritualism, never exhibiting this better than during the many years of near blindness in his old age, when the grace, courage and humor with which he bore this affliction drew the admiration of all who knew him. His books remain as a testimony to Monsignor's great desire to share his knowledge of the life to come, and to Anthony's own homage to truths which sustained him throughout his long life. Author unknown. My Home Enlarged. So many of my reader friends, being painfully conscious of the immense and disruptive changes that have taken place upon Earth, have been led to ponder what changes, if any at all, have occurred in the spirit world. They know that neither we nor the lands wherein we live are static, that we are forever progressing and advancing, and that while we cannot undergo the vast upheavals that have so violently shaken and disturbed the earth world, bringing havoc and ruin, yet things must have altered with us in some measure, in some manner, since that time when I first broke the silence of the grave in these writings. Incidentally, what a dismal, melancholy phrase is that, to break the silence of the grave. How can the silence of any grave be broken? That which lies in the tomb is but lifeless matter. I, the real I, was at no time in any grave. However, let us think of something more cheerful and pleasant than graves. My friends, too, are very kindly interested in my own welfare, and they wonder how I have got on during these passing years of your calendar. The first question we will discuss later. For the present, in answer to the many friendly thoughts that have come to me, I can say that I am truly well, happy, and supremely contented. Of personal changes there has been none worthy of your interest. I am fully occupied, managing to make myself useful in a number of directions. You will doubtless recall that among my various activities is that of helping folk when they are making their entrance into these lands at their death. I work in company with others, chief among whom are my two friends, Edwin and Ruth. The former, you will also recollect, is an erstwhile priestly colleague of my earthly days who met me upon my arrival here, and whose welcome presence I was overjoyed to have in those initial moments immediately following upon my transition. Ruth is a young lady of great charms whom we met upon my journeying forth, under Edwin's able guidance, to see the wonders of these lands. She joined our expedition, upon our invitation, with great alacrity as she was in similar case to myself. That is, She was a new arrival, and was just as ignorant of everything concerning this glorious new life as I was. From that moment of our first encounter, we have been fast friends. The three of us work closely together, so closely, in fact, that both Edwin and Ruth spend far more time in my home than they do in their own. A most happy and pleasant arrangement. Beautiful is Ruth's own dwelling, yet there is something that appeals to her in the old house which has been my home since my advent into these realms. There is nothing very outstanding about this house, though it is incomparably more beautiful now than its counterpart in which I lived when on Earth. But it suits my purpose. Indeed, I can say it suits the purpose of all three of us. I have mentioned the house to you before and given you one or two details concerning it so that I will not make myself tedious by going over old ground. I must tell you that Ruth has undertaken the entire disposition of it in all matters, and I am perfectly content to leave it so. Though there may be no observable changes in myself, we have, however, made an addition to the house. It came about in this way. First, I must explain that there are thousands of people engaged upon work similar to our own. We are really all part of one organization, but we work in small groups. Edwin sometimes undertakes, we all do at times in more or less degree, some task alone as on the occasion when he met me at my dissolution. But we find by experience that when we come forward to offer our help to people who have just left the earth at their death, and who, knowing nothing of the true state of life here, fervently and fearfully believe that they are to be dragged off to a frightful judgment, we find in such case, that the force of our numbers adds weight to our words as we each individually explain to the sorely perplexed soul that there is nothing to fear, nothing to cause the least anxiety. That soul can turn from one to another of us, three different personalities, different in feature and form, real and human in appearance and voice, and he can seek corroboration, and find it. We present nothing of an angelic appearance that would, in good truth, terrify the new arrival out of his wits and serve to conjure up images in his mind of the angel of death, whoever that may be. I have been present at many passings, but I have not yet encountered this peculiar being. He is just one of the strange adjuncts so closely associated in the minds of some folk with the awful change, as the simple procedure of passing into the spirit world has been so stupidly denominated. Our purpose is to calm any fears and induce tranquility of mind so that everything is eliminated or avoided that would tend to obstruct our efforts and add to our labors. When Edwin met me, he was in clerical attire, exactly as I remembered him, and I was similarly habited. Now Edwin normally wears his spirit habiliments when he is in his own realm, but if he had met me clothed in such manner, then just as surely should I have taken fright, of that I am convinced. But to see him standing the looking precisely as he did of old when on earth, together with his cheerful countenance, at once served to reassure me. And that saved Edwin a vast deal of labor. Although the women folk, of course, are fully represented among us, by far the larger part of our particular section of this organization consists of men who were clergymen during their earthly lives. Transitions vary so greatly in their circumstances that we find it to be a first-rate advantage if we meet, fairly frequently, all those who are connected with our own group, to discuss our individual experiences and to exchange and compare notes. It increases our knowledge prodigiously, and provides us with invaluable information upon which we can base any future action of our own when similar circumstances present themselves. Such meetings take place over a wide area of these realms. It is not an original and exclusive idea of our own. Our meeting place varies as we each take it in turn to act as host or chairman to our companions, just as so many small society meetings are conducted upon Earth. When it devolved upon me to accommodate our friends, hitherto we had always met in a chamber upon the upstairs floor of my house. The chamber that was set apart for these gatherings is extremely pleasant, but hardly large enough for convenience and comfort. It is true, the view from this upper floor is enchanting, but then we do not foregather merely to gaze upon the undoubted splendor of the scene. As the numbers of our workers grew, I felt the time had come to provide other and more adequate accommodation. Edwin and Ruth, who had naturally perceived the state of affairs as readily as I had done, were in hearty agreement with me. We thereupon betook ourselves outside into the gardens to survey our little domain, and at length we decided upon the right spot upon which to build an extension or annex to the main building. We discussed the style and form the new room should take, its interior and exterior disposition, how it should be furnished, and such details of like nature. The first active step thereafter was to consult the ruler of the realm, lay our proposals and plans before him, and seek his approval. For though we may have earned for ourselves the right to increase the dimensions of our home, that is not to say that we have become a law unto ourselves. For you must know that in these lands everything is done conformably and in good order. It may puzzle some of my friends as to how we know when we have earned the right to possess anything in particular, which in this instance happens to be an increase in the size of my home. That is a question one finds very difficult to answer. Nor am I alone in this. So many processes and procedures become as second nature to us here in the course of our lives that we scarcely stop to ponder just when this condition first exerted itself, so to speak, and became part of our lives. Some things, of course, are very apparent. For instance, the first occasion upon which Ruth and I made the attempt to move ourselves by the thought process instead of using our legs in the old method of locomotion, which we had employed hitherto, that we shall never forget. It was such a revolutionary event in our lives. I fancy that there are not many of us who will forget an experience of that nature, for it made us realize very early the immense power of our minds. The most I can say, then, with regard to our absolute knowledge that we are free to possess some particular thing or another, whatever it may be, is that we are conscious that we lack that object, and that we have a strong, deep desire for it. Then we are aware that our desire has passed out from our minds, and in place of the desire there is the unmistakable certainty that we are at liberty to possess. So that the procedure comes to this: first one has the desire to possess, and that thought leaves us. Whence it goes, I am unable to say. If, after the wish to possess has been projected from our minds, we are entitled to possess, the desire will no longer be as a yearning, for in its place will come the knowledge that nothing debars us from becoming owner of what we want. We are, ipso facto, virtual possessors. We have then only to take the necessary steps towards actual ownership. But if we have not yet earned the right to possess, then the desire will remain with us as an unfulfilled desire until such time as we have advanced spiritually. We shall be aware of a positive barrier. In saying that a knowledge of the right to possess takes the place of the former desire to possess, I would not have you understand that our interest weans. That is not so. Our interest, in good truth, actually increases. But there is a vast difference between a desire that is only a desire and which must remain unfulfilled, and a desire that can be transformed into an immediate fulfillment. Your own unhappy experiences during an earthly life will speak with sufficient eloquence upon that point. This is, I am afraid, a very unsatisfactory account of a very natural process in these lands, but you will understand that there are so many matters upon which we are as yet uninformed. When such is the case, and I cannot give you reasons or explanations of some one process or another, then the best I can do at the moment is to describe what takes place and leave the question of how it takes place either to some expert in these matters or until such occasion when I am a great deal more advanced upon the road of such specialized knowledge. There are numerous subjects upon which my good friends of Earth would like more information, I am fully persuaded, but they will be the first to acknowledge that there are also many questions which are so easy to ask, but more than difficult to answer. Alternatively, there are a deal of questions whose answers would leave you no wiser, not that your intelligence is limited, but because there is much more to be learned and disclosed first. That is precisely the case with your friend who is setting down these words for you, for I must first be able to understand what I am talking about before I can ever hope to frame it in terms sufficiently perspicuous for your own comprehension. In these varied writings which I have set before you, I have ever aimed at being as clear and precise as it is humanly possible, to shun as you are advised to shun that strange and elusive gentleman, the devil, on any account, of whatever nature, that is vague in meaning. The friends who advise me here upon these writings have given me a sound maxim: stick to facts, they say, and leave the trimmings alone. To return to the new wing of my home. Before setting out to see the ruler of the realm, we made in a roughly drawn sketch, a plan of the new chamber as we should like it to be. We are not accomplished draftsmen by any means, but we managed to produce a drawing, rather crude, but we hoped sufficiently clear, to place before the ruler and from which it would be possible for an architect to glean a good understanding of our requirements. We sent forth a message to the ruler to explain our needs, and within a moment's space of time back came the answer, an answer which said, not that he would grant us an interview, or that we might present ourselves to him, but simply that he would be most happy to see us. There, I think, you have in a few words the true character of this great personage. For he is not a remote and unapproachable being, surrounded by so many satellites that to come within measurable distance of his very presence would be almost an impossibility, except to those who are themselves already illustrious. Perhaps I shall be challenged upon the quickness of their response made to our request, in that, with such vast numbers of dwellers in these realms, it would be literally out of the question for one man to give interviews to everyone who asked for them without the passage of some considerable time, as you would reckon things on earth. But the fact is precisely as I have stated it to you. We waited but the instant for our message to travel to the ruler and for his reply to travel back to us. Nor can any degree of privilege whatever be claimed for us in this case. The simple truth is that the ruler is never unnecessarily communicated with in this way unless the need is imperative or otherwise unavoidable. If we can gain what help we need elsewhere, we always do so, but in the matter of erecting a new building of any kind here the ruler is always consulted first. It is a precept from which we never deviate, though conceivably the heavens would not descend if we did. The most that would happen is that we should have committed a breach of good manners, and taken upon ourselves a high degree of presumption. Our feelings in the circumstances, however, would be sufficient reprimand. No finger would be pointed at us, no word spoken. Our own thoughts would be sufficient. Not only in such cases I am mentioning now would we feel thus, but in any other departure from good taste and the established order of things here. With our free invitation to call upon the ruler, we set out in great good cheer, for this was something of an event for us. We had oft-times witnessed buildings going up in different parts of the realm, but this was the first occasion upon which we were actively concerned in the erection of a building that was to be our own. The ruler himself lives in a most beautiful residence. I would like here to observe that I call him ruler for want of a better term. One might call him chief, or head, or leader of these realms, and yet no one would adequately convey the true meaning of the office which he holds. I use the title ruler, therefore, with such a reservation as I have made. We know him here by his personal name. His position and functions being known and understood by everyone, the mere mention of his name is all that is required. We address him by that name. His functions are wide and varied, as you can well imagine, since he acts as a father to us all, rather than as one set in authority over us. Servus servorum, he would say in good truth, without affectation, and within the real meaning of that phrase. The building which he occupies is large, since he retains the services of many assistants and colleagues. There is no shortage of willing workers, and there is always something to do. The result is efficiency of the highest order in all concerns affecting the welfare of the realm and its inhabitants. He has experts without number upon every branch of human endeavor in these lands. Those who work for him, and in working for him they are, of course, working for themselves towards greater spiritual progression and advancement. Those who work for him are thoroughly conversant with the whole organization of this realm, each in his own department. The ruler leaves his people to do their work without troublesome interference, knowing that he can rely upon their knowledge, kindliness and good sense. This leaves him free to perform those many little, as he would call them, acts of kindness and helpfulness which have gained him the devoted affection of every dweller in these realms. For it is common to see him upon his way through the lands, enjoying the beauties of the countryside, and being greeted and welcomed upon every hand wheresoever he goes. Thus we went to seek this great soul. His apartments, in the spacious residence he occupies, are modest and unpretentious, beautifully equipped, it is true, but without those adjuncts with which one might suppose a great leader would be surrounded. In fact, one would describe his office and personal apartments as being decidedly homely. We had but a moment to wait before we were taken to see our friend, and such is the way of things here. We were treated like royalty during that brief while. As soon as we entered the ruler's chamber, he made us heartily welcome, and seated us in comfortable chairs. He knew the purpose of our visit, but nonetheless, he asked us to give him all the details of our wishes, which he did from motives of pure interest, and not of lordly patronage. There was no question of going hat in hand, to use a familiar expression. He was delighted with our plans and notions for the contemplated extension, made one or two capital suggestions far and away beyond what we had planned, and finally gave the whole scheme his warm-hearted approbation and blessing. With this matter settled so expeditiously, he next inquired about our respective activities, apart from those in which the three of us are concerned together, and then reverting to the purpose of our present visit, he invited us to see a man in whom he was much interested, an architect of great skill and originality who, he knew, would be delighted to draw up a proper plan and undertake arrangements for the building itself. A brief walk brought us to a charming house encircled with tastefully laid out gardens, through which a pleasant brook ran its clear course. The occupant was seated without doors. He rose upon sight of us, and came forward to greet us. The ruler, of course, he knew at once. A brief introduction, not to make us formally known to our new friend but rather to give him our names, together with such few personal details as would establish a cordial relationship. Had we been strangers entirely upon our own, we should have received just as warm a welcome, so that such formalities as were now observed were purely nominal. Our new friend was geniality itself. He was profuse in his thanks to the ruler when the latter had explained the reason for our descent upon him in such numbers. He was happy to do all he could, and as, he said, he was at the moment merely idling away his time, we could go into our business at once. We were amused at his description of his present situation, as we had only a moment since been told by the ruler that he was a most industrious soul who never seemed to stop work for an instant. The architect took us into his workroom, and we seated ourselves round a table upon which were large sheets of paper and a variety of drawing instruments. Rather diffidently I drew out our crude sketch, which certainly appeared more like a child's scrawl in the presence of so many skillfully drawn plans and designs, which we could perceive in different parts of the room. He laughed at our hesitancy and complimented us by telling us that on many occasions he did not have even the roughest scratchings on paper, and relied upon what he knew his inquirer wanted. Fortunately for many of us similarly situated, it is not at all necessary to make elaborate plans, provided we know in our minds what it is we want. If we have some moderately clear conception of our needs, the perceptive faculties of the architects of these and other realms can quickly ascertain exactly what is required. That, of course, applies to all of us here. The experts in the numerous crafts will soon gather what we desire, and in most instances will make capital suggestions of which one never dreamt. A final and complete plan is made, however, for the masons, and that our friendly architect now proceeded to do. The new chamber was to be longer than it was broad, and rectangular, a sort of great hall upon a smaller scale. There would be windows upon three sides, and double doors at each end, one pair of which would afford entrance from the main building, and the farther pair would lead directly into the gardens, so that whichever way we happened to glance we should see the trees and the flowers and the lawns beyond. The windows themselves were to be mullioned, with some colored glass introduced at the top. The question of paneling arose, and we were a little undecided upon this point. Just then Ruth turned to the architect and whispered something to him. As the ruler, who had remained with us and Edwin and I were obviously not meant to hear, we became studiously occupied with our own conversation, but we could not help an occasional glance at the two of them. There was evidently some little secret in progress. We observed the architect point to a series of positions upon the plan he was making. Ruth smiled and nodded, whereupon the architect smiled and nodded too. He had seemingly joined the conspiracy as well. At length the plan was sufficiently advanced for us to see how the new chamber would look, and we could but admire the general prospect with the additions which the ruler had made, together with those which the architect had himself introduced. There was to be no delay in the proceeding, and after we had made another call, this time to the Hall of Fabrics, and thence returned home, we should find everyone there assembled to commence operations. As the architect would himself be present to witness his work being created, we bade him a brief goodbye, and walked to the Hall of Fabric. Here we chose a choice carpet for the floor, a beautiful piece of work, thick in texture and rich in color, to tread upon the pile of which was like walking upon a finely kept lawn. We arranged for what furniture we needed, and at length arrived at our home. Of details of the actual erection, it should not be necessary for me to speak, for elsewhere I have given a fairly close account of how buildings are set up in these lands. The method is the same in all cases, and the present one is no exception. It was vastly interesting, however, and as Ruth firmly declared, positively thrilling, to watch our own new apartment growing into life before our eyes. Our enthusiasm was shared by many other folk, and we were the recipients of a host of complimentary remarks, just as on numerous occasions we had complimented others in like circumstances. Before the work actually commenced, the ground had been prepared. That is to say, as we were to build upon a site that was already carefully laid out in lawns and flower beds, the latter were removed into other quarters so that nothing was lost. Once the requisite space was clear, then work began, and so soon as the main structure was created, the few adornments that we had decided upon were added. For instance, the insertion of the stained glass in the windows. At length the whole chamber was completed, and we were invited to step within and inspect it. With a word of invitation to the assembly of friends and neighbors who had gathered to watch the proceedings, we entered. Ruth, Edwin, and I were enchanted with the absolute perfection of the work, and we expressed our gratitude to both the ruler and the architect for their respective suggestions which, indeed, crowned the work. At present the chamber was without furniture, and completely bare. I bethought myself of one or two pieces that were to be found in different parts of the house, and which I had collected from time to time. They had been beautifully carved by skilled craftsmen, and I thought they would suit our new room admirably. With this idea in mind, I left my companions for a moment to seek out the several articles, a cabinet, chairs, and so on. It was a little while before I returned. When I did so, it was to find that the carpet we had chosen had been laid, and a long and very substantial looking table had been placed down the center of the chamber with a number of chairs round it, and notably a fine, heavily carved armchair at the head of it. Possibly my friends had put it into my head to leave the new apartment on my quest. Whatever was the truth, and I have my suspicions, imagine my surprise and delight when I observed, hanging upon the walls between the windows, six of the most exquisite tapestries. This, I learned, was the outcome of the whispered conspiracy carried on between Ruth and the architect when we had discussed whether or not we should panel the wall. It appeared that Ruth had made these hangings herself and had kept them by her, awaiting a suitable opportunity for their disposal. The moment had at last come, she said, when they would be put to a good use. The tapestries depicted rural scenes, showing an abundance of flowers and trees, and they had been so fashioned that when the whole six of them were hung in close juxtaposition, they formed a long and continuous panorama of countryside.